RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Time for our semi-regular catch-up with the Deputy Prime Minister, the Foreign Affairs Minister, the New Zealand First Leader, Winston Peters. Winston, thanks for coming back on. I hope you're well.
Yes, thank you very much, and thanks for having me on.
You've been busy?
Yeah, we've been very busy, rightfully so, of course. We've got a lot of contacts to make in a big world, and we're trying to get through them as hard as we can.
Okay, first up, the sinking of the HMNZS Manawanui. What were your first thoughts when you saw that thing on its side or listing over on that reef in Samoa?
Well, I was devastated, frankly, and so was Ron Mark, because we got that vessel and got it commissioned in 2019. It was a great buy out of Norway, and they threw in a lot of free utilities as well. And to think it's been sunk now is just devastating. And I can't say much because of the full-scale inquiry will be underway shortly. But the remedial work we'll have to do is it compounds that matter as well to try and clean the oil and whatever other contamination has happened. So, yeah, very, very sad.
Yeah. And it wasn't a fighting ship as such, was it? Winston, it was more like a survey ship. I'm just getting the context of its use in mind.
It was a service ship and adapted for the purpose that we were using it for. And it had a great number of special utilities which were added onto it to help divers and people like that.
Right.
So in all, you know, we are just shattered to think that this could have happened. And again, we have to forestall for making comment or predictions, but we'll await the outcome of this inquiry very, very seriously.
Well, I guess the good thing is everyone got off and everyone's safe, and that's the main thing. But no one likes to see one of your ships go down, you know? It's tough.
No, it's devastating. But as you say, the only good news was that we got everybody off safe.
Let's go to the Middle East. Are we close to, dare I say it, Winston, a third world war?
Well, the circumstances are much more heightened now in terms of how tense the situation is. We've got, you know, an act of war, so to speak, and then retaliation, and it keeps it going day in, day out. And the need for diplomacy now has been made out many, many times by us, but it's more important than ever to ensure that, how shall I say it, this level of heightened tension doesn't explode into something that the last thing we want to see, full-out war in the Middle East.
Is it possible? I know anything's possible, but...
Well, we hope not. We hope not. But, you know, if you're going to be firing rockets over day after day from certain countries and expect there to be no reaction, and I think the surrounding countries are going to have to impress upon the players there that this has got to stop. And by that, I mean the surrounding countries that we're talking to Iran, for example. We know they've got proxies acting at their behest in terms of both Gaza, both in Lebanon, and of course in the Red Sea, all of which is massive in terms of loss of life, but also terrible cost added to other economies who are innocent of this matter.
Whose side are we on, ultimately?
Well, we've got to be on the side of peace, and that's what we've been advocating for a long, long time.
When it comes to our vulnerability, Iran, I think, have said if Israel attacks any part of our oil setup, our oil installations, refineries, fields, etc., they'll go harder and target everything in the region to do with that. And I believe, here it comes, that without Marsden Point, we've got a limited amount of time of buffer on diesel fuel and jet aviation fuel, etc. That could become very hard to get if things kick off. Have you been thinking about that? Has the government been thinking about that scenario?
Yes, we were thinking about it a long way back when Shane James and I saw the ownership of Marsden Point way back in 2020, and asked them what their long-range plans were. They were very, very covert. They were very, very secretive, and we came away thinking these people aren't being frank with us. And, of course, they were allowed by Megan Woods, who did not tell the rest of the country, didn't tell even like members of her own party what she planned to do, and she allowed the shutdown. It should never have been allowed to happen. In my view, it is a matter of economic treachery to allow that to happen because it exposes us to, in circumstances of supply blockage, to not being able to keep essential industries going over in a very quick time. So this is the worst possible outcome, and I had a hope that the mainstream media would have understood what they were dealing with here, rather than to send this wake signal that we're going to get out of fossil fuels, when they were critical to our transition. They're critical for firefighting, for ambulances, for hospitals, for everything that's critical in a society. And I'm so sad that the kind of debate we should have had, it did not happen, and people were allowed to get away with virtue signaling and almost blameless in the lack of focus as to who was responsible for what.
Yeah, because there'll be plenty of people running for cover in the event of a blockage, a shortage, because that's has so many consequences.
Is it too hard to put a microphone under Hipkins's nose, and or anybody else for that matter, or their finance spokesperson, and say, did you know this was going to happen? What was the sequence? Did you get papers? What were they? Can we see them? You know, this is a major industry. We've only got three large, what you might call heavy industries in this country, at TY Point, New Zealand Steel, and Marsden Point, and one of them has been closed. Right under our nose. This is a tragedy.
Yeah. Just staying in the Middle East for a moment, the International Court of Justice has said it is plausible that Israeli actions in Gaza constitute genocide. People have got their views on that. And recently, our government, your government, broke with our Five Eyes partners in voting for a UN resolution calling for Israel to end its unlawful presence in occupied Palestine territory. The vote passed. The US voted against. The other Five Eyes abstained. But we voted differently to those traditional allies. Can you explain why we would have done that?
Well, first of all, we do have an independent foreign policy. The second thing is we put all the caveats on as to why we were unhappy with the resolution. But in the end, we believe the resolution had to do something, set out some parameters for going forward and to bring peace about peace eventually. And so it seemed to us that we should, having put all the caveats on about what we were unhappy with and the misuse of the judgment, so to speak, of the legal decision, so to speak, all those things were there. But nevertheless, we do want to see a peace there and a long-lasting two-state solution, which has been this country's position for decades now.
You launched a bid to be on the Security Council. We've been there before, haven't we? I'm sure I remember that we've been there before. Recent speech of yours. And there's a kind of vibe in the room, wasn't there? I see that it was reported in a particular way. What happened there?
No, I was at a different meeting, and we were making submissions at that different meeting. A group that had already spoken decided they're going to carry on their discussions after they'd made submissions out loud. And so I got into it about a minute and a half, and I thought, this is impossible. Why isn't the chairperson stopping them and asking them to leave the room? And was that group over there and a woman against the door, out speaking loud as though nobody else mattered? And so I just stopped and asked for a bit of order, and we got it.
Yeah. It was like, oh, grumpy man from New Zealand just said something.
No, well, somebody attacked me for not reading the room. That person didn't know what they're talking about. When you go to the United Nations, you come all the way from half around the world, we all have, and we expect to be heard in terms of diplomacy. Diplomacy is here on the other side, quietly, and this wasn't happening. And, of course, they should have been chastised much earlier. But at the full UN, I made the bid for the 2039-2040 position, because I kind of thought if we can get that in there alongside the request for the misuse of the veto to stop by the major powers there on the Security Council, then we might be able to get there with a message of standing up for small countries, small states, small populations matter, without the massive cost that has occasioned New Zealand when we've tried in the past. So we kind of thought we can put our position in there. It's a long time from now. And then, of course, some person made the statement, or Winston will be at this age when it comes around and
It's
kind of nasty stuff, you see. This is important matter. Your nation is on the line. It's your imagery. It's a part of the real world. And some journalist in New Zealand thinks it's a joke. Isn't that sad?
Yeah, maybe not a surprise. Okay, the Pact for the Future that was signed off in New York end of September. Many people think it might undermine New Zealand's sovereignty and ultimately provides the architecture for probably think I'm crazy saying this, but it's kind of one world government. Should we be involved in these things?
Well, they should look at our coalition agreement, where one of the critical things is that any decision at the UN before it's signed up or agreed to by us must be, quotes, in our national interests. So we keep control of our engagement there. That was a specific thing that New Zealand first put into the coalition arrangements.
Yeah, some of the countries did want to stop any meddling in their local affairs, et cetera, and that was pretty well just kicked out of the playing field. It sounded sensible to a lot of people to not allow that.
No, we made it very clear with the World Health Organization that we will be in charge of our national interest. We'll make the decisions because we're responsible in democracy to our own people, that we believe in international cooperation, but does not mean international control.
Okay. And winding up on infrastructure and energy, I mean, we know about what happened to Windstones in Ohakune. Obviously, there's the shutdown of the works in Timaru. That's because sheep numbers are a quarter of what they used to be, Winston. Can you believe it? Almost under 20 million now from 80 million not too long ago. So where are we economically, do you think? Price of power, is it time to renationalize the power grid, Winston? I wonder if you've got an opinion on that. And looking into the quarter four, where are we heading?
Well, I made my view very clear in 1998, when the National Party set out to change the power structure of this country and its ownership, where they said that they were going to plateau out cost rises, and the plateau ended up being vertical. And I made it very clear then, and was in part of that agreement, or that arrangement, that if such a thing happened, then the government would have a right to fix pricing. And it never has. And we've got to get back in control of this thing, because we used to have a cutting-edge advantage called cheap energy. A bit like having, you know, cheap diesel, cheap fuel in Saudi Arabia, and we had cheap energy. How do we lose this massive cutting-edge advantage for New Zealand homes and New Zealand businesses? And the price has gone through the roof, and we've got to stop it. We've got to turn this thing around and real fast, because it's a major cost of living and cost of doing business impediment now.
It's old school, but do you think some items are so affecting of the nation in such a way that it is sort of rightful to have them in a nationalized state for the good of everyone, sort of like the railways used to be, I guess, as well? It's a lost leader for all sorts of other things in the end, isn't it?
Yeah, but railways was as much, you know, it was a no-brainer, as the owner and head of Mainfreight said, well, developing our railways is a no-brainer. It makes all the sense in the world, because we can't afford heavy trucking on the damage on the roads to the volume that there is. And so here we are. We turned railway around dramatically between 2017 and 2020. We've opened up. We, for example, lowered all of the tunnels, all 17 to Whangarei Array. And that sort of progress has sort of stopped after we left in 2020. And we've got to start all over again. We need both roads, and we don't need railways, and we also need a level of shipping, because we're a maritime nation as well. So it's sad how we have missed the boat in a way that we used to be a world leader. In fact, in 1904, we had the biggest team, we had the biggest ship liner in the world. And we've lost all sense of what we used to be when we had a fraction of our population. But then you had practical members of parliament who'd never seen a university, but they knew how things worked in practice. Well, as Mike Moore used to say, well, we know it works in practice. Let's see if it works in theory. That's what's gone wrong with our politics.
Well, let's leave it on that. Winston, thanks for coming back, and look forward to our next chat. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.